Why should you visit TheChairShot.com? TheChairShot.com is your home for hard-hitting reviews, news, opinion, and analysis with attitude. Why? Because you're smarter than the average fan. TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
With the dragons, so we back up in here. Spit fire from the back of an ear, coming straight from the belly of the beast that's in the back of your ear, whispering shit that's got you clapping your ear. This panic and fear is damaging. Radical stages of behavior that's got you on a scatty thing, looking for the big bites, and you might find happiness. How? If you can make it through the same shit that a nappy girl skips, cause I'm a visionary, not a vegetarian, but meeting me is living weary. These kids about to run a riot, flip cars, flip bars, hit class and silence. We don't need a reason, I'm a sad it's quiet.
If there's one thing I can't stand, it's someone who makes excuses for their shortcomings. You lost fair and square to Brock Lesnar. At Backlash, you will lose to Samoa Joe. But tonight, you will lose to the modern-day Maharaja.
The two of you are complaining about the greatest Royal Rumble when, due to a serious medical injury I sustained at the hands of Bobby Lashley, I wasn't even able to go. But you know what? I'm feeling a lot better tonight.
Everybody, we are live. My name, of course, is Greg DeMarco. This is Outside Interference, brought to you each and every Tuesday night live, and also available anytime, all the time, on demand at my home, thechairshot.com.
Thechairshot.com. Always use your head.
You can find me on the Twitter at ChairShotGreg, and of course you can follow the website, thechairshot.com, on the Twitter at thechairshot.com. Of course, you can also find it on Facebook and Instagram, also at thechairshot.com. We're going to have a lot of fun today talking Backlash, talking Avengers Infinity War, but it's not just me. It's never just me, because if it were, that would be boring. Oh no, we have my best friend, my co-pilot in this crazy little thing we call the world of professional wrestling, and that is the wrestling realist, Patrick O'Dowd.
F-A-B-U-L-O-U-S.
Good evening, Greg.
And of course, you can find him on the Twitter at Wrestling Realist. That's WrestlingRealist Realist, RealIst. He is the Sting to my Lex Luger, the Wrestling Realist.
Look at you bringing conversations.
That's right.
To the show tonight.
Which means at some point I have to turn on you. Basically, is what that means.
I mean, every 5 minutes you turn on me. I mean, it's basically what our relationship is. So
yeah, I mean, it's almost, that pairing is almost as appropriate as the Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn pairing. So which is even appropriate. Although no one could seem to convince you to grow the goatee back and even eventually a beard to really match Sami Zayn. You've been fighting it off.
Nah. I think I'm okay.
I don't know why. Rugged is in, Patrick O'Dowd. Rugged is in.
You know, but I got these boyish good looks. Like, and I can't lose those.
You look like you're 12 years old. I know.
Boyish good looks. Very charming. The ladies dig it.
That's true. I was just checking the calendar to see if your birthday here in a couple of weeks fell on a show night. It does not fall on a show night.
The night before.
Yes. So That's okay though, and we are, you know, we're privileged. We talked about it last week, and we're very excited because once again, we are not doing this alone. Oh no, we are excited yet again to have someone joining us on the show, second visit with the show, and you know, because it's a WWE pay per view week, we get to have a lot of fun.
Man, watching.
And that is,
hey,
of course,
guys,
the theme song for @_DeniseSalcedo on the Twitter. Denise, welcome back.
I know. I'm so happy to be back. I was just telling you guys before we went on air, I feel so much has happened since the last time we talked. I'm just excited to kind of like get the ball rolling and keep it going and just keep talking all of this crazy stuff.
Yeah, we're extremely lucky to get to talk about this and just get to enjoy something as crazy and as goofy as professional wrestling and share it with friends, share it with each other. I share it with friends. I also share it with Patrick O'Dowd. So it's a lot of good things there.
You know, you did. You lugered.
I had to. I couldn't wait.
You didn't even wait till the end of Nitro. We did the we opened the show. You turned on Sting once again.
The way Nitro goes, we'll be teaming back up together by the end of the show anyway, so it doesn't matter. But
then,
Denise, of course,
Tony Schiavone will yell, "We're out of time."
Denise joined us before WrestleMania. We did a little WrestleMania preview. As you heard last week, she did send along her picks for Greatest Royal Rumble. Today we're going to do some Backlash, and then next week Patrick and I will actually release the standings, and we'll see just how bad we're doing as compared to Denise, because I can tell you, Denise, you pretty much killed us on WrestleMania.
Really? I was trying to remember when I was giving you my picks, I was like, man, I forgot to kind of like double check everything and see how exactly well I did or how not well I did. So I'm pretty excited to hear what your stats are.
Yeah, I mean, you had some really smart predictions like Brock Lesnar and things of that nature. So you really beat us there. And that was, you know, smart on your part. But we'll share more of those next week and go over the standings. Plus, Greatest Royal Rumble happens. We have those standings. And now we're going to have Backlash, lots of pay-per-view all at once. Then, of course, today, you know, we're going to take a step aside from the world of professional wrestling and talk about Avengers Infinity War, which I know we're all excited to do. And remind our listeners, Patrick, that sometimes we talk about things other than wrestling.
That's true. And it's always – thank you for coming on the show, Denise, because that's why Greg is going to talk about something other than wrestling, by the way.
Nice.
We'll just get that out there. Like, he doesn't let me do this, like, unless there's, like, you know, a guest in the house, so to speak.
Nice.
Yeah, I mean, you can go that direction if you want to. But
no,
let's
it's true.
One of our most infamous shows is one that was just you and I, and we called it Show Paris, and we talked nothing about wrestling, and people loved
it. Like,
so.
That was in the 7-year history of the show, that was like a month ago.
Yeah, it was.
Like, you're acting like we do this all the time.
That's true.
Like,
that's true. Yeah. Patrick is also referring to when Leva Bates joins the show and he gets to go off on his tangent and I go make a sandwich and come back like an hour later and they're still talking. So it's
Leva Bates. We did that with a couple other folks too.
We have.
And I guess this is kind of still tied into wrestling though, don't you think? Because of Batista. So I guess we're not too far off.
Not at all. One of the greatest pictures that I've shared on social media, and I'm sure we've all seen it, is Triple H standing next to and pointing to Thanos holding the entire Infinity Gauntlet with all six stones in it. So, love that picture. I might change it later when I post the episode to the site and use that picture, and we'll have some fun there. But this is the best 55 minutes in wrestling that never only lasts 55 minutes, but that's what we planned to do. And we got a lot to talk about. So first off, Denise, I mean, you're back from WrestleMania. You're back, you know, you're just doing so much stuff. You know, Aero Lucha just announced its return as it's coming up and doing another taping in Nashville. Like, what is new in your world that we can update the people on?
Oh, man. Well, so much. First of all, you know, I'm still doing the X-Pac 1-2-360 podcast. We just had Rikishi in the studio, so that was, like, really amazing, really awesome, such great stories. So there's a lot going on with that. And then, yeah, Aero Lucha announced Rey Mysterio. We're coming back June 17th to Nashville. So that's going to be even more exciting because for our first show, our first taping that we did in Nashville, we completely sold out where we had to turn people away at the door. And, you know, you never want to have to do that, but that's just how crazy things got. And so many people came out. So I am honestly just so excited to come back and, you know, put a show on because I feel my best when I'm with Aero Lucha and we're putting on these shows for the fans. And it's just such great energy. So for anybody that's listening to the show and is in the Nashville area, you know, definitely check out AeroLucha.com and you can get all of the information there for that show. And that's pretty much what's going on in my world right now.
Excellent. Very, very good. I mean, we're huge in Nashville, I'm sure. I'm guessing. I don't know. We got a couple of them. But no, you should definitely check it out. I love the Nashville, the Fairgrounds Arena Nashville too. It's just such a great atmosphere. It's got a lot of wrestling history to it that people may not immediately associate with the building. And it's just really a cool place to have a wrestling show. And Aero Lucha gets to do that and you get to be a part of it. So we're all extremely excited about that. And go for it. Go look up Aero Lucha online because you can actually, you know, you can be an investor in all. There are people out there that brag about owning part of the Green Bay Packers football organization. You can earn part of Aero Lucha as well and be an investor. So go out there and check that out. It's all over the place. Lots of fun. But we're going to talk about some Backlash because we've got some matches to pick. And we're not, loyal listener, we're not going to go deep into Backlash because we know you want to hear us talk about Avengers Infinity War. And so that's what we're really going to get into. But we've got to get these picks in. So we're talking some Backlash. Backlash coming up this weekend, kind of, you know, a little lost, maybe a little thrown together with the Greatest Royal Rumble. We'll dig into that real quick. And Denise, we'll start with you. Does the Greatest Royal Rumble and the fact that we put so much energy, so much focus, both from a wrestling standpoint and just an emotional standpoint with all the controversy, what does that do to Backlash? Does it help it? Does it hurt it? What does that put Backlash in your mind?
You know what? Honestly, I feel like with the Greatest Royal Rumble, like I've been talking about it. I've been writing about it. I'm like mentally exhausted about it. It's really weird. You know, it's kind of, you know, for the Greatest Royal Rumble, there was a lot of hits, a lot of misses, you know, some good stuff, some bad stuff, and a lot of controversy, mostly controversy. I feel like the fans, there were some matches that we can definitely obviously tie into with Backlash, but then there were some where it was kind of like so disconnected, I think, you know. So, for example, like with Daniel Bryan and Big Cass, you know, we're going to have this Backlash match, but it helped out that we had their whole thing that happened at the Rumble, and same with you know, obviously Samoa Joe didn't have anything to do with Roman Reigns for the Greatest Royal Rumble, but now he does this time for Backlash. So there's some parts that definitely connect and some don't. But I think that the fans, or at least I know I am separating both show without some of those minor points where they still sort of connect.
Yeah, there was little bits and pieces here and there, but at the end of the day, it was a glorified house show, and that's kind of what it was about. Patrick, what about you? Anything involving Greatest Royal Rumble that really has any impact for you on Backlash whatsoever?
No, not particularly. I kind of what Denise was talking about. There's just it was a nice, at the end of the day, it was a nice special show, as you described it, a house show that went five hours long that didn't really do too much to kind of influence where Backlash is gonna. Where Backlash goes next. I think that what it did do was hurt. Yeah, I think you sort of asked this question, Greg. I do think it sort of hurt any sort of hype that you could really go into Backlash. Like there, I think there's some fatigue there, with this particular program now, because like we had WrestleMania, shortly thereafter, we've been building to this greatest Royal Rumble, and WWE treated it like a big deal. It was, you know, billed as this huge deal. It was this thing. And Backlash has just kind of been going on in the periphery, yet not in the periphery. And, like, here it is. Now it's time. And you know, you kind of look at the rundown of the card, and it's a solid card, but, like, it could have been more. Because it could have, I think it could have been built more.
And that's
what hurt it.
And that kind of card can really surprise you in the end, and we'll talk a little bit more about that as we get there. But we do want to dive in. We want to make some picks, and then we want to have some fun talking about non-wrestling stuff. So we're going to kick things off at Backlash with a tag team match, the only tag team match on the show, because neither tag team title is being defended as of this moment. And that will be Braun Strowman and Bobby Lashley teaming together to face the team of Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. Patrick, we'll start with you. Kind of as usual, people haven't listened before. We talk about who should win and who will win. So what do you got for this match, Patrick O'Dowd? Who should and who will?
So I think it's funny that you asked about the greatest Royal Rumble, and I was like, it didn't really influence it very much. But I feel pretty strongly that the guy who won the greatest Royal Rumble should go over in this tag match with Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn, unless they're doing something between Bobby Lashley and Braun Strowman, which is possible. But I'm not going to pick against it here. I think Strowman and Lashley should win. I think they will win. I just think that Strowman is a momentum train that just needs to keep rolling through.
All right, there we go. Denise, what about you?
Oh, yeah, I totally agree. I mean, after the greatest Royal Rumble, you know, with Vince McMahon handing Braun Strowman that trophy, he's basically saying, dude, you're the guy, you're the next guy, we're the one that we're going to put all of our eggs in your basket. So I kind of feel like Braun Strowman is just at the point where he's just like running chaos, beating everybody up, winning things left and right and whatnot. Plus with him and Bobby Lashley as a pairing, it's two big buff guys that, you know, are good and they can do something and it'll be really fun. So I think who should and will would be Braun Strowman and Bobby Lashley.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Like, my heart wants to pick Zayn and Owens for one of these two items, at least it should, because, you know, they're kind of floundering right now, and even though they're super entertaining, especially Sami Zayn, but I cannot justify Braun Strowman and Bobby Lashley losing this match. I just can't, you know, with Lashley winning, or with Braun winning the greatest Royal Rumble, and even that weird green belt that they said was going to be on Raw that wasn't on Raw, because it's just a weird green belt that doesn't really mean anything. So I'd love to pick Zayn and Owens, but I just can't, either one of them. I got to go with you guys. Braun Strowman and Bobby Lashley should win this match. They will win this match, and we'll see I think the story about this is what happens next for all four of these performers, and that's going to be an interesting topic for us several weeks down the road. Going over to the SmackDown brand now, the SmackDown Live Women's Championship is on the line, where Patrick O'Dowd's favorite wrestler in all the world, Carmella, defends her newly won SmackDown Live Women's Championship against Charlotte Flair in her Charlotte's rematch. Of course, the last one was the Money in the Bank cash-in for Carmella. Denise, we'll let you begin here. Who should win this match and who's going to pick up the victory?
I think, you know, personally, I'm not too crazy about Carmella being the women's champion. I guess it just doesn't do it for me, you know, but I do think that she should win just because, you know, she just won the bout. You kind of want Charlotte Flair to chase the belt a little bit more. So that's why I think that she should retain. So I think that if anything, maybe the Iconics might cost Charlotte the match. So that way, you know, Carmella can keep her belt and whatnot. So I think it should and will be Carmella on this one.
All right, Patrick.
I mean, it always should be Carmella, and it will be Carmella. Which, by the way, Greg, I love that you have expanded my appreciation of Carmella with each show. Like, this went
you
from...
You have no choice.
I was like, I kind of like Carmella. The next thing I know, she's the greatest wrestler of all time today. Like, that's what happened here.
F-A-B-U-L-O-U-S.
Wait.
I mean, it's Carmella.
I agree. But I'm just like, wow.
Are you
but
going
yeah,
with,
should,
with Carmella for both?
Of course, she should and will win. Like, there's no question here. I defy LOL Charlotte wins.
I think that Charlotte should win this match. I think that the way you've built up Charlotte and the way that you're trying to build her career, she got cashed in on, and that's why she lost her championship. She didn't lose it fair and square, and if you put her in the first even matchup, I think she should win it back. However, I think there's an opportunity to build a feud here and involve people like the Iconics, like Denise was saying, and really give Carmella, who, let's be honest, regardless of where she's been and the run she had or lack of run she had in NXT and so far, my opinion is that she's knocking it out of the park since winning this belt. Like, her segments on SmackDown have been fantastic. She's playing her character to a T ever since the screaming when she was cashing in the briefcase. I mean, it's just been perfect. And so all the kudos in the world to Carmella. I think Charlotte should win it back and kind of go on her tear and maybe feud with the Iconics and do whatever. But I think Carmella's going to win. I do think she retains here, and I think that this will stretch out a little bit. Maybe if they're smart, they can blow this off in a way that is a big deal because we're preventing interference, whether it is in a cage or something else, and you can actually give the women that kind of spotlight. Even if it's a SmackDown main event, you could really give them a big spotlight. So I am going with Charlotte should, but Carmella will. Turning things around now to the Raw Women's Championship, we have Nia Jax, who, of course, won her championship at WrestleMania, going one-on-one with Alexa Bliss. Patrick O'Dowd, your should and your will.
I didn't want Nia. I didn't really like the Nia Jax storyline to begin with. Like, I get it, and I understand. I was just never a big fan. I think Nia Jax should win this match. I think she will, though I do love a good Alexa Bliss PSA. Those are a lot of fun. I don't know. I'm not behind Nia. But the WWE is right now. And so I think that she should win again. She just won the championship at WrestleMania. I don't see them taking it off of her already. I think she will.
All right. So we got Nia/Nia. Denise, what about you?
You know, so for WrestleMania, I think that one of my biggest upsets of the night was Nia Jax winning the belt. I remember even saying it, like, on the predictions. I was like, I don't want Nia Jax to win, but I know she's gonna, just because if not, she would look like a total loser with the whole storyline that they were building up towards her, you know, making fun of her being the fat girl or whatever. I feel that should be Alexa Bliss, because I'm still wanting Alexa Bliss to be the champion, but will is going to be Nia Jax, just because, you know, they can't take the belt off of her yet. You know, it just wouldn't be right to do that to her. But I also think that it is time for Nia to kind of see different challengers. We don't want to just see her and Alexa Bliss. And I almost feel that because Alexa and Nia have such good chemistry, that's why they haven't actually done separate programs for them. But I really want to say that I feel that Alexa Bliss is kind of really helping Nia Jax in this sense of way, because I don't think that Nia Jax can have somewhat of an interesting storyline without Alexa Bliss, if you get what I'm saying. I'm just like this super huge Alexa Bliss fan, and I do not want to see, I feel like she's the one that's making the storyline even better now with the Moment of Bliss, and everything that she's been doing with that has just been like super hilarious. And now she's turning the tables on Nia, where she's the one that's, you know, being bullied, and I feel she's doing it way better than Nia Jax ever did.
Yeah, you're exactly right. Like since winning the championship at WrestleMania, Nia Jax has done nothing for me. Like, I just don't have any interest in Nia Jax whatsoever right now. And it kind of strikes me. So several years ago in NXT, there was this huge buildup between Sami Zayn and Neville. And Zayn had to put his whole career on the line and everything. And then Sami Zayn won the belt. And then immediately Kevin Owens turns on him. And at the very next takeover, Kevin Owens wins the NXT championship. And Patrick, you'll remember this going back years, and we were firmly entrenched in Ring of Honor back then. And Bryan Danielson, of course, now Daniel Bryan, went on this monstrous run as the Ring of Honor champion. And for about half of his run, it was all about Homicide potentially winning the belt and you know, going to leave the company, all this stuff. And then Homicide wins. And three title defenses later, loses the belt to Takeshi Morishima. It's like sometimes when a champion finally wins the belt, there's nothing more to do after they win the belt. And I feel that's what I feel like we're getting here with Alexa Bliss and Nia Jax. I think Nia should win this match and be given the opportunity to prove that she can do it without Alexa Bliss, like Denise was talking about. However, I don't think she's going to. I think Alexa Bliss is going to retain the belt and kind of open up to some new challengers, and maybe we'll get something else out of Nia Jax, not involving Alexa Bliss, but also not involving the championship. I could see that Raw or WWE loves to hotshot their new stars, and so I could easily see Alexa Bliss winning and going on a feud with Ember Moon. And then we'll see what's next for Nia Jax. But I'm going to pick Alexa Bliss to regain her championship here and Nia to go on to something else, I guess. What that is, I have no clue. But that's we'll let them tell us that story. Shifting gears back over to SmackDown, we have the SmackDown Live United States Championship. Jeff Hardy is your champion. He's defending against Randy Orton. Denise, what do you think here?
You know, it's funny because, like, looking at this match, I feel like, you know, it's 2018. I'm sure we've seen varieties of this in the past, you know, Jeff Hardy and Orton. But honestly, I'm just happy that Randy Orton is actually having, I guess you can say, a worthy opponent, a worthy program, I guess you can say, because, you know, he was feuding with Jinder for such a long time. So over that, at least with Jeff Hardy, he's like somebody that, you know, has earned the fans' respect and has done some amazing stuff in his career. So I think this is good for both of them where they're at right now, where they both, I guess you can say, Randy is just floating around doing all these random stuff, random feuds, and Jeff Hardy is kind of like getting back into the realm of things and whatnot. So this to me is just like a match. There hasn't necessarily been like a great buildup for this match. So I'm not like, oh my God, I really need this person to win, or I really need this person to win. It's just kind of there, but also I'm glad for Randy Orton.
So I'll make sure I get him right. So what is the should and what is the will?
I'm going to go with should Jeff Hardy and will Jeff Hardy, just because, you know, he just necessarily has a title. So I'll go with Jeff Hardy.
There you go, Patrick.
I just want to lay it out there that, Craig, there were some shots fired there on one Mr. Jinder Mahal. Who had the United States title for a cup of coffee before having it ruthlessly ripped away from his hands due to a rigged system. But anyway.
He did more for that belt than Bobby Roode ever did in only 2 days.
Hell
yeah.
So. Shots fired. Anyway, this is like the epitome of a coin toss match. When you look at it, like on paper, like either one of these guys, and this is going to sound bad. Either one of these guys should win this match, and either one of these guys will win this match. Looking at history and the way the WWE works, you know, honestly, I didn't feel like Jeff Hardy should have won in the first place. But that was just me. Because Jinder got robbed.
Of course he did.
I do think he should retain. I'm gonna go with Randy Orton to win it, because they just like to have Randy Orton win belts off and on, and it happens so often. Like Randy Orton wins belts, and so
more title reigns than you can imagine.
It's crazy, and it's not that he's not a bad wrestler, like not at all. But Jeff Hardy should win this match. But I'm going to say Randy Orton does it.
So Randy Orton, there's no reason for Randy Orton to win this match, in my opinion.
There isn't.
Whatsoever. Like, he doesn't need the United States Championship. He needed to get the Grand Slam, got the Grand Slam, great United States Championship. Everybody, Grand Slams are a dime a dozen now in WWE. Everyone seems to get them. If you're close, you're going to get that fourth belt. Like, I think the hardest belt in the Grand Slam is the third right now. And once you get the third, you're a shoo-in to get the fourth, because we love history in WWE. We love creating history in the modern era in WWE. But to me, Jeff Hardy just won this belt. Jeff Hardy with the United States Championship looks weird. Like, I always think of him as an Intercontinental Champion, but that really shouldn't make a difference. In WWE's mind, they're the same. They're both secondary titles. Jeff Hardy is on the rise. Like, if you look at YouTube numbers specifically, he's usually number one or number two on the SmackDown views for YouTube. And if you kind of look at the balance of things on SmackDown, too, you've got The Miz, you've got Samoa Joe, and you've got the fourth – oh, and Shinsuke Nakamura on the heel side. And then on the face side, you've got Daniel Bryan. You've got AJ Styles, and you kind of have Jeff Hardy and as your third top face on SmackDown. And so I see Hardy keeping this belt and probably moving into a feud. Plus, I also think we're about due for a Randy Orton vacation. Like, Orton tends to take some time off, and it just seems like the time of year where Randy should be taking a vacation. So something tells me Randy's going to go away for a few months after this and maybe come back later on in the year and get his yearly vacation in there. So my should is Jeff Hardy. My will is also Jeff Hardy. Over on the Raw side of things, we have kind of a cross-brand match right now. The Intercontinental Champion on Raw, Seth Rollins, is defending against the former Intercontinental Champion, now a member of the SmackDown brand, The Miz. So, Patrick O'Dowd, your should and your will for this?
Seth Rollins should win this match. Seth Rollins will win this match. And the WWE has that taboo, don't cross the titles over thing. So I'm sure that now that I've said that, The Miz will win and ruin everything for me. You were talking about people who just don't have anything else to do. At the Intercontinental title level, I don't think The Miz has anything else to prove. I don't think he has anything else he needs to do. It's widely agreed that he put that title in a place that it hadn't been in a long, long time. It's really time for him to do something bigger. I've been saying this for, a month worth of shows now, I think. At some point, he's got to move on from that championship and do something bigger and better. And I think it's on the horizon. I think Seth Rollins retains, and I think he should.
Denise?
Yeah, I totally agree. I remember we were talking about this, actually, the last time I was on, was that, The Miz, we've seen him be Intercontinental Champion. We know what he can do. It is time for him to go on and do something new and, go above where he is at right now. And I feel that Seth Rollins, is necessarily he's finally getting a decent chance to hold a belt for a while. So I definitely think he should and will retain. Plus, also because SmackDown already has the U.S. title, so I don't see them also having the Intercontinental title. So I don't know that's a dead giveaway, if they're going to do that or not. They might want to surprise people. I don't know. But I'm going to say should and will Seth Rollins.
Yeah, if they pull a surprise, that surprise will be undone by the end of SmackDown on Tuesday after the pay-per-view. It won't last very long. Maybe that's foreshadowing to some crazy things being undone in the Avengers Infinity series that we'll talk about here in a little bit. But, it does seem to be telegraphed. Seth Rollins should win this match. Seth Rollins will win this match. It's weird because the WWE, like, this just screams of, contractually obligated rematch. And in the WWE, you're entitled to a contractually obligated rematch, except when you're not. Like, Finn Balor and the Universal Championship and lots of other things where people don't get their rematch. You didn't have to give The Miz his rematch. You could have done something else here, but that's what they went with. It'll still be a good match. The Miz, he's kind of in a holding pattern until Daniel Bryan frees up. So I think that this is going to be a great match. It's going to be a great showcase, and I do see Seth Rollins winning, and that's what should happen. Denise, Samoa Joe will go one-on-one with Roman Reigns, another cross-promotional, cross-brand match. Of course, Samoa Joe from SmackDown, Roman Reigns from Raw. Who do you have?
All right, so first of all, I got to say that I feel really bad for Roman Reigns. Like, I know he's super hated, super booed, but the way that he's been getting booked, you just can't help but to feel sorry for the guy. Since WrestleMania, he had a good match with Brock Lesnar that the crowd completely hated, did not pay attention, did not care. And then he basically came on Raw the next night, was whining like a little baby, had Samoa Joe completely burn him and shut him down, which is what Samoa Joe is known for being, that incredible, tough, badass person that we all know and love so much. So it just made Roman Reigns look really, really bad. And then at the Greatest Royal Rumble, with the whole controversial finish between him and Brock, there were so many different things that could have happened in that match. And then this, basically with the ending, it ended up making Roman Reigns not look so great again, because again, he did the same thing just like he did after Mania. He did it on Raw again after the Greatest Royal Rumble, basically whining that he was screwed and all of that stuff. And so I think that should Roman Reigns just because I feel terribly, terribly, terribly bad for him, but will Samoa Joe because, you know, they're eventually going to want to build him up and, you know, I'm just going to say will Samoa Joe.
All right, Patrick.
I'm with Denise on poor Roman Reigns, quote unquote, poor Roman Reigns. Because I've hated, and this goes to WrestleMania too. Like I feel like where Roman Reigns, people believed he was ascending to, that has passed for now. And I feel like the way that he's going through this sort of gradual drop down, and then unfortunately, you know. It just kind of continues to go. He can't wrestle Brock Lesnar again for a while. Like, he just can't.
Right.
And I think that you look at, you know, where, like, I feel like he should win this match against Samoa Joe to get his mojo back. I think this is a match where either guy who loses, whoever loses, it does not help very much at all. Because you basically really need to build momentum for both of them. And I know they can get it back. I'm going to err on the side of I think Roman Reigns should win this match. I think Joe has less to lose by losing than Roman Reigns does. I'm going to say Roman Reigns does get the win. I'm going to say he will win.
So for starters, I just want to share how happy I am that Denise said that Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar had a good match at WrestleMania because...
Oh, yeah.
Listeners, I just want to point out, listeners, you are in the presence of a wrestling podcast. Just think about that, a professional wrestling podcast where all three members of the show think that Brock Lesnar versus Roman Reigns at WrestleMania 34 was a good match. We're the only three people in the world in the same place at the same time. Yeah. I actually believe that. Like the amount of hatred that match received. And when Denise said that, like I was just holding it in. I was like, I'm so happy that Denise feels the same way that we do because no one else did. So
I actually didn't feel that way when I was at the show because I was a part of the crowd. It was so hard to pay attention to that match. So it wasn't until, like, you had to rewatch it and see, because, you know, I was being told, hey, if you press the mute button on the TV, that match is really good. So I was like, okay, I got to see for myself here. And, you know, it was. And, you know, Roman Reigns took a hell of a beating from Brock Lesnar, but I would have never known this had I never actually rewatched because of everything that was going on in the crowd.
Well, I'm glad you did. I'm glad you rewatched. I'm glad you had the opportunity to see that match because you're exactly right. It was way better than anyone gives it credit for. As far as this match goes, I disagree with you guys both. I think Samoa Joe should win this match. I know Roman Reigns has not been booked favorably, and I have my theory, and I wrote about it recently at thechairshot.com. If you log on to thechairshot.com, you can, in fact, read the article that I put on the
thechairshot.com. Thechairshot.com. Always. Use your head.
They are literally keeping this belt on Brock Lesnar so he can break the CM Punk modern-day longest world championship reign for the WWE of 434 days, which he'll do before the Money in the Bank pay-per-view, which is when he's rumored to return. By the way, that news bite you can also find at thechairshot.com.
Thechairshot.com. Always use your head.
And I feel like they've just literally been treading water with Roman Reigns, like Denise said. He just keeps coming out crying like a baby about the same thing over and over and over again. That said, we have an opportunity to make a major star out of Samoa Joe over on the SmackDown brand. I think he should win this match. But I can't see a situation where he does. It's Roman Reigns. He's eventually going to beat Brock Lesnar. Outside of Brock Lesnar, I don't think anyone's going to have his number anytime soon. And so I got to pick Roman Reigns to pick up the victory here. SmackDown puts a match together that I don't think a lot of us expected when the actual superstar shakeup happened and The Miz went over to SmackDown. But Daniel Bryan, with his one-on-one pay-per-view return, will be going against Big Cass. And Patrick, we'll let you start here. Who should win? Who will win?
Honestly, I think Big Cass should win. Because I think that it tells a better, longer story. Daniel Bryan making his singles match return to pay-per-view. We believe that Daniel Bryan will find a way to win. But I would like to see this go. I would like to see this go for a bit. I think that the best way that you can tell the story of Daniel Bryan versus The Miz is to keep those two apart for as long as possible. Because they just don't do that in the WWE. They don't do that in wrestling anymore. And in storylines as often as they could. I'd love to see it be a feeling of inevitability by SummerSlam. And, you know, that's still a few months away. You can get a couple matches out of Daniel Bryan and Big Cass. But with Daniel Bryan making his return in a singles match, I think he will win.
All right, so we got a win for Big Cass, or a should for Big Cass, a will for Daniel Bryan. Denise, what about you?
You know what? This one's a little bit of a toss-up for me. So, you know, we know since Big Cass was moved up to the main roster, we knew that he was going to be the one being pushed to the moon, you know, not Enzo. So, you know, when his injury happened, he came back. I feel like this Daniel Bryan Big Cass storyline happened so quickly. And when Big Cass did his promo on Raw, I was actually really impressed by his ability to actually cut a promo, because I didn't really know if he was going to do well, and he did. So that was impressive. And then come the Greatest Royal Rumble, I was so beyond pissed when Daniel Bryan did not win, and better yet, that he got eliminated by Big Cass. So obviously I know why it happened. You know, they want to push Big Cass, you know, make him the ultimate heel versus Daniel Bryan, who has everybody cheering for him, always on his side. Everybody loves Daniel Bryan. So obviously people are going to get pissed with Big Cass. So I guess you can say what they're trying to get across with Big Cass is actually working, because I'm that person that's completely hating on Big Cass now just because he eliminated Daniel Bryan at the Royal Rumble. But I do think that if Daniel Bryan can't get a good match out of Big Cass, this is going to expose Big Cass. Like, this is not going to be good for his future if he doesn't have a good match with Daniel Bryan at Backlash. So I think that this match with him and Daniel Bryan has a lot riding for his career, and how the fans are going to, you know, how they're going to see him, how they're going to portray him, if whether or not he's going to be a guy that can at least have a decent match with somebody. And I think that's obviously why they put him in a program with Daniel Bryan, because Daniel Bryan is one of the few guys on the roster that can actually carry somebody, you know, to a good match, you know, like AJ Styles would, where he can, you know, help a guy out and whatnot.
Gotcha. So who you think is going to win, and who should win?
So should win Daniel Bryan, just because I love Daniel Bryan. Will win maybe Big Cass, just because, you know, they had him eliminate him at the Royal Rumble. So maybe Big Cass. I'll go with Will, Big Cass.
I think Big Cass should win this match. Daniel Bryan doesn't need to win this match. You can blow this thing off again further down the road. Although I have a feeling Daniel Bryan's probably going to be in the Money in the Bank ladder match, because people want him to do so well so fast. And I think he'll be in that match. I don't think he'll win it, but we'll talk about that later. But to me, Big Cass should win this. He's back. We're establishing Big Cass. It's like you said, if you can't have a good match with Daniel Bryan, who can you have a good match with? And I think this will be a good match. I've been impressed with Big Cass in general. Even when he turned on Enzo and the way that feud went, the promo work that Big Cass did was extremely impressive. Like, he kind of didn't really need Enzo and really proved that kind of what he was saying in the promos was right. He didn't need Enzo. Enzo was dragging him down, and now I think he's on the road up there. So I do think Big Cass should win this match, and I think Big Cass will win this match. I think that they are going to blow this off some other way with Daniel Bryan. They'll find a way to win. It probably won't be clean, although it could be. They're not beyond using Daniel Bryan to put somebody else over. Daniel's not going to be hurt at all by a loss here to Big Cass. So I could see Daniel Bryan on the losing end and Big Cass picking up the victory, which brings us to the match that excitedly will probably be the main event of the show. Will probably go on last and deserves to. And that is the now no disqualification match for the WWE Championship as AJ Styles defends against Shinsuke Nakamura. Denise, who should win and who will win?
Oh, so who should win? I'm going to say AJ will win. AJ. It's funny, because before, that was, in my opinion, I thought Shinsuke, but I wasn't too happy with their WrestleMania match. You know, it wasn't great to me. It wasn't what I expected from a dream, quote-unquote, dream match. Their match with the Greatest Royal Rumble was a lot better. The storyline has progressed immensely where these guys literally hate each other. So that literally makes you like it even more. But I'm thinking that out of all their three, out of their two matches, with this being now their third match, I think that maybe this might be the one where it's like, it completely tops the last two. So again, I'm just looking for a really good match, but I think who should win AJ Styles and will win AJ Styles just because I think he's doing a great job as a champion.
All right, Patrick, what about you?
Honestly, this is third time's a charm. I agree with Denise and that the storyline's built up a lot better. I still it's new music and a different attitude, and I think that's really helped Shinsuke a little bit. I'm still not screaming from the mountaintops that this is the greatest thing to happen to, you know, for Shinsuke ever in the history of ever, but I do think that he's been a lot more interesting since, you know, the nut shot at WrestleMania. The no disqualification thing, sets it up for you to look for Shinsuke to win. But I'm actually, you know, I think I'm going to stick with, I think I'm going to agree with Denise. I think that this is, I think this is a chase that gets blown off soon. I just don't think it's yet. We just had this heel turn. And I don't know that they're going to do the flip-flopping of the belts, so they may. But I don't think it's going to. I don't think it's going to be this time around. I think AJ retains.
So you kind of really provided the reason why I think Shinsuke is going to win, and that's
flip-flop.
The heel turn.
Yep.
I think the flip-flop and the heel turn kind of makes sense. Yeah, the WrestleMania match was a letdown. I completely agree with what Denise said. And I hated it at the time. Of course, it led to the heel turn. And now, for the first time since he's been on the main roster, I feel like I get Shinsuke Nakamura. And I've been on record on the show, as Patrick will tell you, as not really feeling it, not getting it. And now I think he just works way better as a heel. I think it's his time. I think he should win this match, and I think he will. I think we end the show with Shinsuke Nakamura as the champion. It's funny. The no disqualification stipulation, to me, does actually lend itself to AJ with the way the new attitude he has thanks to Shinsuke. It does kind of lend itself to AJ picking up the win somehow, but I do think this is where Shinsuke wins and can kind of have an entertaining summer. They're probably, depending on what they do with Daniel Bryan and The Miz, I think they're also going to build to Daniel Bryan and Shinsuke for this belt at some point. Maybe if Daniel Bryan does get a run with the WWE Championship, it comes against Shinsuke Nakamura. And maybe he even does that before feuding with The Miz. Who knows? Like, there's just so much wide open right now over on SmackDown Live. But I do think this is Shinsuke's night. I think he does end the night as the WWE Champion. So should and will are both Shinsuke Nakamura. And those are our picks for WWE Backlash, which takes place, of course, this Sunday on the WWE Network. However, now it's time for us to move on, talk about a new topic. And before we do, we got a reminder for everybody.
It's time for another edition of Baron Corbin Sucks.
Career is fading faster than his hairline.
That'll do it for this week's edition of Baron Corbin Sucks.
All right, loyal listener, we got to give you the warning. If you have not seen Avengers Infinity War, as much as I hate to do this, you may want to turn around and go the other way, because we're going to talk about the movie. In fact, if you haven't seen Avengers Infinity War, go ahead and pause this, whatever device you're listening on. If you're listening at thechairshot.com, if you're on iTunes or Spotify or Stitcher or iHeart, wherever it may be, go ahead and pause it and go read some of the great content over at thechairshot.com.
Thechairshot.com. Always use your head.
Head on over to ProWrestlingTees.com/thechairshot and pick up your chair shot t-shirt. We would definitely appreciate if you do that as well. Tune in also Wednesday. Go to Pin the Shoulders podcast. Listen to one of their great interviews that they're going to have Wednesday night as well. Lots you can do and not have Infinity War spoiled for you. However, if you're still here, you've been warned, because we are now going to talk about Avengers Infinity War. And the easy first question, because whenever something like this is so hyped up, kind of like WrestleMania, kind of like any other big wrestling event, when there's so much hype involved, we got to determine, did it live up to the hype? Denise, did Infinity War live up to the hype for you?
Yes. You know what? I think that, you know, prior to this, everybody was like, Avengers Infinity War, Avengers Infinity War. And I was just like, honestly, I'm just happy The Handmaid's Tale is back on Hulu. All right. But either way, everybody was just like, Avengers Infinity War. And I was like, all right, you know what? I'm going to watch this. People are telling me it's the greatest thing ever. So I go, I watch it, and I'm literally just like enthralled the entire time throughout the entire movie. I literally just was like with my mouth open trying to figure out like what is happening here. There were some moments where I was like, no, please, no, especially some of, I guess you can say, the specific Iron Man moment where I was just like, no, because I love Iron Man. But I think it was a really fun movie.
I think for me, Greg, it was really. Hey, I mean, you've known me for years, so, and you knew
quite
me when I used to. Yes, when we worked together out east, like comic books have been part of like me and who I am and what I've loved. Like I've loved comic books since I was a kid. Every payday would drive, you know, 45 minutes from the campus where we worked to the comic book shop that really wasn't that far away, just Connecticut was a bear to get around, for comic book day. And so when these movies first started hitting and you know, being in fear of what Iron Man was going to be like, because nobody was sold on that, and seeing Samuel L. Jackson come out from a back tab. From that moment 10 years ago where we said we were going to get an Avengers movie to then getting that first glimpse of Thanos after the Avengers movie to hear was such a – it really did feel like a culmination of something that had been built and that Marvel had put into place. And there had been some changes along the way as to what the plan was going to be. For example, Spider-Man wasn't always in the plan because Marvel didn't have the rights. And it didn't look like Disney was going to get them. But to be able to sit there and to see something that I grew up loving that wasn't always something that people just commonly were like, yeah, we're going to go check out a comic book movie. And then to see it up on the screen and to see them in for 2.5+ hours get it to work and work really well. It was very much what I wanted out of that movie. It still managed to surprise me in a couple of different ways. But I was very pleased. I saw it twice over the weekend. I saw it, you know, I saw it at a midnight show, and then I took the Little O'Dowd on Sunday.
I'm with you, and I'm not the super fan that you are, and that's not a knock at all. Although it is kind of funny that, you know, years ago, saying you wanted to go to a comic book movie was kind of like saying you wanted to watch professional wrestling, and people weren't exactly into it. Now, people look at you funny if you don't watch a comic book movie when it comes to the Marvel series. I loved every second of this movie. Like, I cannot knock it in any way, shape, or form. To me, it was kind of like the Marvel version of Mad Max Fury Road, because it just was nonstop from beginning to end. Like, you just – they barely gave you any room to breathe, and that's why I think seeing it for the second time like I did really helped me out big time to watch that for the second time. Interestingly enough, after seeing it twice, I have no desire to see the third, at least not right now. Like, I need some time to kind of let it all sit in. But in a world where things can get so hyped up, like a great example being WrestleMania 34, and then people in hindsight think they didn't really live up to the hype, I think this one did, and I really did enjoy it. And when we get analytical, just to kind of let everybody know, Denise, like, you and I will typically have to go first because Patrick is the super nerd that knows all about this stuff. And so I feel like if he goes first on some of these topics, like we won't have anything left because he might steal it just a little bit. So maybe a lot of times you and I have to go first, but that's okay. That's no, that's a compliment to you. And you should take it as such. Any big surprises for you when you watch the movie, Denise?
You know, I think that some of the surprises for me were, one, I felt that Gamora's death was unjust. I think that she had the most unfair storyline from this movie just because, you know, she hates this man that's supposed to be, you know, her father, quote unquote, because he raised her, even though she doesn't consider him a father, but he does. I felt that the fact that she didn't get to die on her own terms and that she didn't get to, you know, keep the secret that she had to herself. And, you know, she was basically used and not used for something, like, just not basically used. She was used for worse. And that's the worst part, because that's not what she wanted. So that surprised me that she didn't get any justice. And for a character that we love so much, you know, in Guardians of the Galaxy, I felt she wasn't honored and she didn't go in a pleasant way. And some of the other things that surprised me were the ending, how it wasn't really necessarily explained. And I think that I will go, like, once we go through theories and whatnot, I will go in further about that. But I would say that those are some of my biggest surprises.
Gotcha. Definitely good. You talked about how Gamora died, and I'm going to talk about what I loved about this movie. I love when bad guys win. I really do. It's just something where if I ever write a movie script, I'm probably just going to title the movie "The Bad Guys Win" and go from there, because I just feel it's just fun for me. Like, I was a kid, I tend to root for the bad guys. And so, like, Thanos was my hero in the movie. Like, literally, I'm watching this movie and I'm rooting for Thanos. And I'll talk about a theory with that a little bit later. But I love just the way, like he had the emotional toil with Gamora and then just tossed her off the cliff anyway. Like, he stuck with what he was trying to do, stuck with the plan. Like, everybody was but a part of Thanos' plan. And I absolutely loved that that he went to the end, at least in this movie, and he got to do exactly what he wanted to do. I wasn't 100% sure we were going to see the end of the movie and half the universe first being wiped out in this movie, or if it was going to be about preventing it. And so I was, you know, pleasantly surprised and loved the fact that we got that. We got that moment. He kind of got his moment in the sun, because we all kind of figure out what's going to happen in the fourth movie. So, Patrick, you get to answer the third question, because you are the comic book guy. What did you hate about this thing? What did you not like?
Oh, I don't get to say what I loved. Jeez, man.
Nah, nobody cares. I'm just kidding. They do care.
What did I hate? It's kind of hard because I didn't hate a whole heck of a lot. And
which
most
is good,
it's actually,
because you tend to pick these things apart. So
and most of the things that I didn't like about the movie were more about the pacing of the movie. Like, you know, it's less about the storyline. Like, you know, when you asked Denise what surprised you, I knew what Thanos did because I've read the comics. Like, I knew that he pulled it off. Mm-hmm. I wasn't entirely sure that that was how Marvel was going to do it. I think that that I really appreciated that they really did a great job of setting everybody up to believe this was going to end like every other Avengers movie on multiple occasions. Like, the movie had hero moments, like,
yeah,
Thor showing up, you know, the big fights, you know, the fight scene with Thanos on Titan, like, Doctor Strange kind of, you know, showing off all of his magical abilities and all this stuff. Like, there was just so much that was done really well. And so for them to finally, and then for them to go through and have that happen, was the right decision and what they needed to do in that movie. But you're never really sure. You're never really sure whether, you know, the producers and the screenwriters and the company will have the stones to do it. I didn't particularly care for, I didn't particularly care for the way that Tony and Doctor Strange suddenly get each other without really seeing how they get each other. Like they should butt heads. I thought that the way that they got to, you know, the way that they got together and gathered, like, all of that made sense and really butted heads. And I think at the very end, I will say that I think that Tony doesn't get Doctor Strange, but Doctor Strange gets Tony, because it just that last exchange between the two of them shows that, you know, Doctor Strange fulfilled the promise that he was going to do, but he understands what Tony can do to probably undo it. So yeah, it's hard to say that there are things that I hated. I thought the Thor storyline took too long to happen. Like, I think that could have been done a lot more efficiently, and maybe not interspersed. The Star Wars style of editing made it feel longer too, where they were cutting from, you know, the battle to forging Stormbreaker to battle, you know, Wakanda battle back to Titan and so on and so forth. And so that was a little much, but really, couldn't say that there's anything that I hated. Like, there's nothing I really hated. It's as a friend of mine would put it, a lot of it's more like minor quibble sort of stuff. Like, right. I would have done this differently. And so I'm okay with that.
You brought up a good point that I actually wanted to ask you about, because
yep.
I didn't read all the comics, but one of the things that I know about Tony Stark is that he hates magic. And I feel like they didn't really get into the whole Tony Stark hating magic thing that much in this movie to really drive the differences between him and Doctor Strange home.
Well, but I think what they did is they really, instead of focusing on the magic, and I don't know that they hate magic, because you got to understand, Tony Stark and Doctor Strange in the comics were part of a group called the Illuminati, like an Illuminati-esque group that was Tony Stark, Doctor Strange, Black Bolt, who's from the Inhumans, who was originally supposed to be in this show and was not, Reed Richards, who they don't have the rights to, like all the heavy hitters in Marvel. Like, and they were around, and basically their sort of arrogant belief was that they were supposed to be the safekeepers of Earth, and they actually, in the comic books, and Professor Xavier from the X-Men, they're the ones who actually make the decision to launch Hulk into space and send him off into what is the Planet Hulk storyline that you see in Thor. And so there's always a healthy respect there, because Tony can't explain what Doctor Strange does. What I thought that they really did was both of those characters are exceedingly arrogant, for different reasons. Both of them being brilliant in their own fields, both of them, you know, believing themselves to be the best way to protect, you know, our reality or Earth. And you saw that really come into play a lot. Like, there was a lot of, well, you don't know, but I know. Well, you don't know, but I know. And that was, I think, really where they tried to run with the friction. And I think it worked particularly early in the movie.
Okay. No, I can definitely buy into that. Denise, one of the things about this movie was the non-Hulk aspect of the Hulk, the Incredible Hulk. Like, he kind of gets his ass handed to him early in the movie by Thanos, and then doesn't want to come out later. Like watching this movie and having seen some of the others, like did you like to focus on Bruce Banner more so than the Hulk for this particular movie?
Yeah, I think so, because, you know, Mark Ruffalo is such a great actor. You know, since the start when he was playing the role of the Hulk, we already knew that, like, from seeing him the first time, we were like, wow, like, this is such, like, he's was the perfect pick for this role. And I mean, the Hulk gets beat at the start, so it would kind of be silly if he came back and, you know, tried again. Obviously, the Hulk is, you know, feeling down, feeling not so happy about himself, you know, that he can just come out and, you know, fight, because he essentially got his ass kicked. You know, he got beat at the start, and that's not something that I guess you can say the Hulk is used to. So it did play well that he didn't want to come out, and, you know, I think it's going to lend to something else in the future.
Yeah, it was definitely different, and it was fun, and you know, seeing Banner, you know, more of Banner, and yet it wasn't quite as upsetting as Iron Man 3 was when there was hardly any Iron Man in it. So I can accept that. The biggest, like I talked about, I love the bad guy winning. A lot of this movie for me was, everybody kind of has their own movie and where they're built. This was the Thanos movie for me, and we talked about theories, and before we get into, there's this crazy theory that I'll present that I don't believe. But it's how I watched the movie. I watched it twice, as Patrick did as well. And the second time I watched the movie, I watched it from a slightly different angle on purpose. So I love the theory, even though it's not true. First of all, growing up as a kid, and still to this day, my favorite video game ever is the original Super Mario Brothers. I love Mario 1. My kids know all about Mario 1, thanks to me and everything else. And I love the theory, even though it's not true, that Mario's the bad guy. And that Mario is running around trying to kidnap the princess, and really Bowser's trying to protect the princess. And we're all, and Mario's got everyone brainwashed. In fact, there's I saw a cartoon recently, like a comic-style cartoon, where Mario goes in there and, like, you know, Bowser and the princess are eating dinner and, like, they have kids. And she's like, Mario, we're married. Like, what are you doing? You're stupid. And to me, like, I watched my second viewing, I kind of watched it as Thanos was the good guy. And everyone was trying to keep him from fulfilling his dream, which is really just saving the world, even though he kind of has a crazy way of doing it. Sort of like Ultron, except just a little, you know, only killing half the people instead of all of them. And I felt like they did some moments in this movie, Patrick, that kind of built you up to at least feel for Thanos a little bit.
Kevin Feige would agree with you, and that's the executive producer of the Marvel Universe. This is absolutely a Thanos movie. And one of the things that I've found really funny out of a lot of, if you read some of the critic reviews that don't like this movie, one of the big complaints is that there's too many heroes and we don't understand their narratives and it's just too much going on. You're not supposed to worry about that because you've watched 10 movies prior to this involving all of these characters. So the assumption going into this movie is that you know who these characters are. You know who the hero's motivations are. You know why they do what they do. Thanos has been around. Like, he's been around in snippets. And, you know, with his largest role being sitting on a throne in the first Guardians of the Galaxy movie, ordering someone else to go do his dirty work. And so you don't really know him. And if this movie was going to work, you had to be able to understand him, and you had to understand his motivation. You had to understand his logic, flawed though it is. You had to understand his relationship with Gamora to understand why it was a big deal for him to throw away the one soul that he loved above all others. And sacrifice that for what he believes is a greater sense of purpose. And, you know, that's why that movie ends the way that it does, with him watching the sunrise and him feeling satisfied. Because from his perspective, like, this wasn't a bad guy, a comic book bad guy grabbing for power, which is a lot of what you see. Like, a lot of bad guys are like, I must have unlimited power, blah, 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 to, like, rule the universe. He was going after power because he believes he's saving the universe and believes that he's right. And when he, you know, he's satisfied as he sits down on that hill, happy for a job well done. Like, that's 100% what you're supposed to do. It is absolutely a Thanos movie.
And I think that because of that, it makes his character more realistic, because he's not just like, he is evil as hell, right? So he's super evil, but he still kind of felt that, like, that humanized aspect where, you know, his love, his feelings for Gamora, it humanized him, where it made him seem so much more real, where, you know, even though, like, he, you know, throws her, it's still, like, he still felt something for that. And I think it made him even more of a villain that he was willing to do that.
Yeah, it was weird. Like, it hits you in the feels, and then he still goes full heel on you. Like, you think Fromoni won't do it, although I'm sure everyone, you know, Patrick obviously knew he was going to do it, but kind of thought that he wasn't going to do it,
no,
and then of course he did.
He was getting all six stones, people. Like, there was no question that he was getting six
exactly.
stones. Like, that was happening.
By the way, two things. Number one, I want to – kudos 5 minutes ago for Patrick saying that Disney had the stones to do it. That was really good.
But
on your part. And Patrick brought up the reviewers, the movie reviews, and kind of the way that, you know, people that love it or hate it. And I want to get your – this is more of personal preference for me, Denise, and doesn't even have a whole lot to do with this movie. Going into a movie, what do you put into what movie reviewers say about a movie before you watch it?
I actually, so I like live and die by the numbers ratings. I don't actually read what people say about a movie. I look at the numbers. So I look at what the critics, like how much the critics voted it and what the audience voted it. And if the audience had a high rating for it, then I will watch it. But let's say like it had a high critics review and a low audience review, I would not watch it. I tend to go more with what the audience says just because I feel like I can relate more and I have a better chance of enjoying the movie.
Where are you on that stuff, Patrick?
Here's the thing. You're talking about two different groups that look for different things. Like I have a couple of friends who actually write movie reviews. And I don't like going to movies with them because they can't look at the film as merely an entertainment vehicle. They're trained and they're conditioned to look at other aspects. And so that's why you get critic reviews that complain about, you know, hero development, because they've never been conditioned to look at a movie as one of a continuum of movies that continues to build upon itself. They're trained to look at this movie individually and review it as such. And so, you know, I look at them, like there's a couple of critics that I like. If the critic hates it, I generally agree with it. But for the most part, like I don't go to a movie a lot of times, and especially this kind of movie, to be forced, you know, to think necessarily. Like I go to be entertained, and if thought is provoked, that's great. Like that's why Black Panther is the best comic book movie that's been made, because it does both. Like it really does force you to think. And you were talking about relatable villains, same sort of deal. Like that is a character that you can understand why they are doing what they are doing. And it's the same thing with Thanos. Like you get it, twisted though it is in our minds. And that's, you know, that's the other thing. Like I will push back. You know, people are saying Thanos is the bad guy. Is he though? Like really, that's the question they're trying to get you to answer is, is his solution, Is he evil because the solution is unsettling? And I'm not saying that I like Thanos. Let me get that out of the way. But, you know, again, Thanos is acting with purpose. And he talks about it in that conversation with Strange and with others, that the people he left behind are now experiencing a life that is not wanting. And so from his perspective, it's not about the people that are gone. It's about the people that are saved and the universe that remains. And that's like he feels that he is seeing beyond the short-sightedness of, you know, losing half the population.
Yeah, and I'm with you in that regard. And I guess I'm not even a mix of the both of you. I'm kind of the opposite. I put nothing into reviews whatsoever. I could care less about reviews on a movie. Like, no one's going to tell me whether or not I like the movie than me. I guess I make my decision based on the trailer, which isn't necessarily the smartest thing to do because it's designed to get you to go to the movie. And half the time, the stuff isn't even in the movie. Like this one, I mean, you have this entire scene in Wakanda of all these people running towards Thanos, and it seems never even – Hulk wasn't even there. Like, it's just, that scene in the preview that is nowhere near the movie and is almost false advertising. But I don't care. Like, I still enjoyed it. But, yeah, I was talking to somebody at work about a different movie, not this one at all. I was like, hey, you're going to go see this movie. And they're like, well, it got really bad reviews from the critics. And I'm just like, why do you care? Like, it's your movie ticket, not the critics' movie ticket. So it is it's so hard for me to really buy into what a critic says, especially because, like Patrick said, how they watch the movie a very different way because they're a critic and where they are. So let's change things around now. Let's have some fun. What's going to happen next? And what are your theories about where this is all going? And Patrick has to go last because he's smarter than us. He knows more than we do. So Denise, where do you think this is all going? Because we had the movie, Thanos snapped his fingers. I saw a really funny, I read an article about this. And they didn't know what to call it. So they went biblical and they're calling it the Snapture. And with what happened there, with what Thanos did. But regardless of what you want to call it, that doesn't matter. Thanos wins at the end of Avengers. He gets his wish, and now he's doing what he said he wanted to do. He's resting and watching the sunset. Where are we going?
So my, you know, prior to watching this, everybody was saying, like, oh, yeah, this person dies, all of that stuff, right? So I thought, okay, they're going to die. So when I watched the movie, I was like, I don't feel like they died. I feel like Thanos took their souls, and I feel like he, like, trapped their souls and kind of just, like, picked and choose some people that, like, I guess he wanted to, like, trap their souls. And that's what I think. I think they're trapped in some, like, weird alternate God knows what universe. And I think they're just kind of, like, there. And I feel like what's going to progress is, like, you know, the remaining people are going to have to, you know, live in a world where Thanos is the most powerful person ever. And, you know, eventually, I feel, look, with most movies, it either ends in a tragedy and it's sad, we cry about it, that's it. Other movies end happily. We've never really had a movie where we've had to continue the film with it in being in a tragedy. Because, you know, Thanos taking people's souls or killing them or whatever it is a tragedy. And we've never had to see, you know, the protagonist kind of like deal and live in the tragedy. So I feel like that's what we're going to be seeing in Infinity War 4. We're going to be seeing them kind of cope with all of this and, you know, go from there, essentially.
Yeah, it's and Patrick would be proud of me because I think you're onto something there in the fact that I do think they are trapped somewhere. I don't think he picked who was going. I think it was random, which is one of the things that he talked about, how he would want it to be done and the way he wanted to see it play out. I think they're trapped in the Soul Stone. I do think that's there's a little pocket of the Soul Stone where they are trapped, and that's kind of how they're going to be let out. I do fully expect everybody who got disintegrated during the movie, I think they're going to be back. I think we'll get some time travel going on, and that's how they're going to kind of undo this. They already did a brief little bit of time traveling with the false finish. It's a wrestling term there, the false finish on Vision and the Mind Stone during the movie. But I do think that's how they're going to bring them all back. My biggest thing, and I really hope that they stick with this, anybody who died a death other than the snap that Thanos did, I don't want them to come back. I just don't want those. Like, those deaths had meaning to me, and that includes Gamora. Like, I know they could find a way to bring Gamora back, and we got another Guardians of the Galaxy movie to come, but I just feel like her death carried more meaning in that movie than pretty much any other death, and I don't want to see that undone, as hard as that is for some people, just because of what she's meant. I love Loki. Loki's my favorite character, and I don't want to see him again either. Like, it just doesn't make sense. I just, you know, to me, they shouldn't come back. And that's kind of my theory is that they won't come back. They'll keep those, but everyone else who got disintegrated, I do expect to fully see back. Because Patrick, you know, has the answer key a little bit, what he thinks. It depends on what direction they go. I will say that Tony Stark and Captain America are going to die in the fourth movie and be dead for real, and kind of exchange their lives, so to speak, even though they use that "we don't trade a life for a lifeline" so many times in Infinity Wars that it definitely has to mean something. I think that they will basically trade a life for a life and save everyone else, and by doing so sacrifice themselves and kind of be done with the franchise. So that's sort of how I do think it ends, with some time travel, go back, right the wrongs. We all know that Doctor Strange, he knows how you win. Like, he said so. There, he watched 14 million configurations here, and, you know, Tony Stark asked, how many do we win? He said one. So he knows the one way it can happen. That's why he made the decision he made to give up the Time Stone, and that will kind of bring us to where we are and how it happened. Plus, you can't leave Black Panther disintegrated. I mean, come on. There's so much money to be made in Black Panther. Patrick just told you it's like the best superhero movie ever, and you can't just let, you know, can't be like, just kidding, he's dead now. Like, that just can't be a thing. So, Patrick, what about you? What do you think is going to happen?
So, the two of you have kind of a hodgepodge of right, but I think some of that will come into play, but not quite the way that you expect. I think the people that are disintegrated, they disintegrated because they never existed. Like, that's the idea. And so I think that the time travel piece of it is actually where it comes into play to bring people back. You're correct in that the Soul Stone does have a kind of what they call a pocket dimension that holds other souls. So it is a possibility that they could be in there. You know that Gamora's soul may be what's in there. Although in the comic books, Thanos is doing this not only to kind of save the universe, but also to impress the goddess Death. And Death often appears to Thanos in the form of a child. And so it could be that too, but I doubt it. The whole point of this, yeah, as you called it, the Snapchat, was to bring everything back to the base. You'll notice not a single original Avenger disappeared.
Yeah, how convenient. And,
well, it's because it's about bringing it back to the original group. I do think that there will be some sacrifices, absolutely, out of that original group, that there will be some people that are not coming back, and some story arcs that are going to be completed. Tony Stark being one of them. I don't know that he necessarily dies. He could die. I think Captain America definitely dies. Of the people that I think that the strongest possibility of dying or not doing it anymore, Chris Evans is Captain America, because the whole thing with Captain America and so many other people, and so many other people that are actually in these movies have taken up the shield at some point. Whether that's Winter Soldier, Falcon took it up at one point. Hawkeye has been Captain America at one point. So there's a lot of people that could be Captain America when he goes away. Iron Man is the same sort of deal, except, you know, in his case, in terms of a super tech genius, it's Shuri from Wakanda. They haven't really teased that threat out very much, so I don't know I think that's a kind of a fan theory that isn't going to happen, but it's kind of fun to think about. I think it's 50, I think you go either way with Tony. You have him start by talking to Pepper. You know, I'm pretty sure Pepper's pregnant. And so, you know, it could be that Tony gives up his wife, so that his unborn child can kind of move forward. Or it could be that, you know, this is what ends his run as a hero, to actually do what he keeps saying he'll do and focus on Pepper. So I think that both of those are good bets of people to die. I think the Hulk and Thor, their story arcs are going to come to an end in some way, shape, or form. Kevin Feige again has talked about, and Mark Ruffalo have talked about, how Thor Ragnarok, Infinity War, and the fourth Avengers movie are containing kind of the final story arc for Hulk and his character. Doing a Hulk movie has always been hard, and it has not paid off. Even the one with Edward Norton, which is quite good, is one of the least successful of the Marvel movies. And so I think that there's going to be some sort of resolution that happens with Hulk that could be final. I don't think he dies, just because it's so hard to kill him, but it's possible. I think Thor doesn't die, but he has to rebuild Asgard, because Asgard got wiped out the old-fashioned way. Asgard didn't get wiped out in the snap of the finger. Asgard got wiped out because a bunch of people got killed. And we haven't seen Valkyrie or Korg from Ragnarok. And so I think they're gonna come into play in the next movie. But that Thor is going to be taking care of his own, because he's it. And that's kind of that. And then you've got the people that are going to come back and be the Avengers after this happens. Greg, I hate to break this to you. I don't think the Vision's staying dead. I don't think he's staying dead by a long shot. And they've done a couple
considering
things.
That he was kind of this combination of things to begin with. I guess it does make sense.
He is a robot and can be rebuilt. And the thing that a lot of people have picked up on and noticed is that in her work, as she was copying and mapping, you know, the pieces of Vision that were not the Mind Stone, she downloads something before Glaive comes in and starts raising hell. And so she has his mind map, and she knows how to put him together in a way that was better than what Bruce Banner and Tony Stark had thought of. So I think the Vision gets saved that way. And is coming back. Gamora, maybe. Because if she truly is trapped in the Soul Stone and they can pull her out of the Soul Stone, that's their workaround around bringing her back. Zoe Saldana has said that she wants to go back to working smaller projects and smaller movies, and so there is the reality that she may not want to come back to the role. And having her die this way, she kind of got to, like, her character arc did reach a lot of conclusions. She and Star-Lord finally, you know, had their moment together before the funny Drax interaction. And so she could be gone for good, for real. I think Loki's absolutely 100% dead. The other major character that they showed died was Heimdall. From the very, very beginning, Idris Elba's character, he ain't coming back. He's done. Goodbye. The interesting thing about Tom Hiddleston and Loki is that, according to most reports, he's contracted for one more movie, but there's nothing to say he can't do something in the past. So we'll wait and see what happens there. And then the other thing that we haven't talked about yet that is definitely going to happen and is going to be the linchpin for the Avengers moving forward is Carol Danvers. At the very end of the tag afterwards, when Samuel Jackson makes a page, the little symbol that shows up when it gets sending, that is the symbol for Captain Marvel, the Carol Danvers iteration. And the thing about Carol Danvers and Thanos is that Thanos was originally one of Captain Marvel's primary foes. So there may even be some familiarity there, depending on how far they want to go with it with the comics. But she's going to introduce a whole new group of aliens that are going to probably launch the next phase of Marvel. And again, I really hope they do it, involving the Kree and the Skrulls. Her movie, which comes out in, I believe it's March, just prior to the next Infinity War movie, is going to be about her fighting the Skrulls, which is a shape-shifting alien race who, in the comic books, attempt to take over Earth by secretly replacing every like half of the population, for lack of a better way, like superheroes and all that. Oh, it cut me off.
A, I had to give you a chance to breathe. B, I needed to make sure people were still listening. That's basically
ouch,
what we had to do.
Ouch,
like,
ouch.
Like,
got it.
Like, that was a lot. Like,
there's a lot
I can't
to unpack,
even,
man.
There is. There's a lot. Like, my mind is blown, Denise. I don't know about yours, but, like, I'm
no,
just, like,
mine is, too. I'm learning so much. Like, you don't even know. I was like, interesting.
Yeah, like, there's so much out there. And the thing about everything that Patrick talked about is that they can't possibly do all of it. It's just not...
No, not at all.
Like, this movie itself, in some ways, if there was any knock on it, did feel a little rushed. And there were things that probably... Like, if they do deleted scenes, there's probably a ton of them. And this is a 2.5-hour long movie. Like, where's the scene about them showing Captain America this new shield and how to use it? You know, where's the scene? There's just so much out there that they could put in this movie that wasn't there. And it might have helped the pacing that Patrick was talking about. Like, this could have been a two-parter, and then you still got another part afterwards. So just so, so very much that they could do. And like you said, Captain Marvel, like so many people like me who weren't huge comic book fans, like no idea who that is. And so going to have to learn all about it. And that's why that movie coming out next year in March is such a good idea. I want to ask you, during the post-credit scene there, you know, obviously, Nick Fury, you know, pages, sends out the page that he does. And there's the theory that he paged Captain Marvel. And then there's the theory that it was more like a distress signal because he doesn't really know who's still around. And Captain Marvel's the one who answered. Which one do you say it is?
Who, me?
Yes, you. The one who knows what he's talking about.
He totally paged Captain Marvel because guess who's in the movie that's coming out in March, in the Captain Marvel movie that takes place in the 90s? Oh, that's
right. But I guess the question was he paging her directly, or does she just happen to be the one that responded?
No. So Carol Danvers is the only of her kind. She is a human woman who was experimented on by the Kree and is a combination of human and Kree DNA. And so she becomes superpowered that way. Like, she's a pilot. or saw, like, she was, like, in the military. So there's a connection there. Like, and I think it's more of, I think we're going to see it's more of, if you need me, here's how to get me. Like, I think that's where it is. I don't think it's, like, Captain Marvel is a lone entity. It's not, she's not part of something bigger.
Okay. Gotcha. Very, very interesting. So do you think that made her immune from whatever happened?
I think that it's supposed to be a hope. I don't know that it made her immune.
Okay.
But again, I think he was like, everything's falling apart. This is the last person, like, this is what I got left. As he, you know, fades away. So it's supposed to be a hope spot. Like, it's a hope spot.
Right. See, we still keep bringing it back to wrestling, which is what we have to do. Denise, for me, the hardest, and I alluded to this earlier, like watching poor Spider-Man sit there in the arms of Iron Man, like, knowing he was about to get disintegrated, I envisioned, like, myself with my own kids, and like in that situation, like, was that, for me, that was the hardest one. What was the hardest one for you?
You know what? That one was really hard because it was weird because just, like, prior to this, I had been watching something else that made me, or I was reading something on the news where I was like, wow, you know, like, there's nothing worse than dying without accepting it, those final moments. Look, no one wants to die. We know this. But I was thinking to myself, I was like, man, when I go, like, those last few seconds, I want to be at peace. I want to have acceptance, you know? And that's not what was happening with Spider-Man. And he was like, I don't want to go. I don't want to go. And that, like, really got me, where I was just like, oh my God, he's going to go. And he's not, like, at peace with it. That's, like, a terrible way to go. And then just, like, the relationship that he had with Iron Man was just, like, it was really, really sad. Like, that was one of the moments where I was like, okay, this is some messed up stuff, you know? So I get you with that moment. And again, I'm going back to Gamora's moment. And then earlier in the movie, when Drax got cubed, I thought that was it for him and for Groot. I thought that was, like, over. And then when they came back, I was like, oh, okay, good. Because I thought that was it. And I felt bad. I was like, no, not Batista.
Oh,
yeah, I thought Dave might have been on the list to go during the movie, kind of like you know, like I expected Loki to go and some other Captain America. So I thought Dave was a prime because it kind of told a story, and I don't know how much there was left to do with Dave, but that's, you know, we'll see what happens in the next movie. I guess.
So you want to know something? Hold on, real quick. You want to know something crazy about that Spider-Man scene?
Yeah.
Tom Holland improvised that whole "I don't want to go" thing.
Really?
Wow.
Like, he wasn't supposed. Like, they wanted him to convey that he was surprised that it happened, and that he didn't want to die. And he did the whole like he was supposed to fade kind of as quickly as, like, most of the other characters did. But the Russos did a Q&A, and they shared that, like, Tom Holland, he did such a great job of, you know, when you're a 16-year-old kid, like, you know, for this whole thing, most of the time, like, he's in awe of everything that's going on around him, but it's still fun, you know what I mean? And, you know, he still operated with the assumption that he was going to be, like, he was going to get through this and they were going to move on. And so he did so well. It was supposedly it was improvised.
That's cool.
In the finish.
That's his line about how can you be a friendly neighborhood Spider-Man if there's no neighborhood, like that. Yep. To me, that was like his moment where he realized what it meant to be an Avenger and why he had to do what he did. So amazing. We could talk all night about this, but we obviously don't have all night to talk about it because we're definitely way over where we would normally be. Denise, please remind before we do that. First of all, after TakeOver New Orleans happened, like, there was this theory out there that I loved. With Tommaso Ciampa, and it was basically just watching his entrance and everything he did. Like, there was a couple tweets out there that basically said Tommaso Ciampa is the heel that we don't deserve, and like, I feel like you're the guest that we don't deserve on this show. Like, you just are so much fun and so
Thank
positive.
You.
And, We're so lucky. We don't deserve it, but thankfully you're willing to do it. So we appreciate you coming on, and we look forward to the next WWE pay-per-view when we get to do this again.
I know, for sure. Thank you so much for having me on. It's always a great fun with both you and Patrick.
Yeah, remind everybody where they can find you.
Yeah, you guys can find me on Twitter and on Instagram at underscore Denise Salcedo. Come talk to me. I'm always tweeting a bunch of random stuff.
Of course, most definitely. Well, we do appreciate it. We look forward to doing this more in the future, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right, have an awesome one. Bye, everybody.
There we go. Patrick O'Dowd, there's only one thing left for us to do. I'm talking slowly because I got to find the sound bite because I keep adding them, and then I can't find them.
All right, gentlemen, you have 3 minutes, and you better make it good.
We got 3 minutes, and we're out of here. The clock is ticking, and we're in the clear. We got 3 minutes, and we're out of here. We got 3 minutes, and we're out.
I'm going to call an audible, not talk about what's on the rundown because it's opening up a whole other topic. We talked about Infinity War and all the hype that came behind this movie, and people talked about how they waited 10 years for this. Is this where the whole thing peaks?
I think it's kind of like Empire Strikes Back. Like when you look at like Star Wars movies, I think this is, I'm going to be very interested to see what they do when this core group of characters are, you know, changed, and they've tried to slowly get you there, you know, after the end of Age of Ultron and some of this other stuff. But after the next Avengers movie, the Avengers are going to be radically different. And I think what their big task is going to be is getting you behind Carol Danvers as the leader of the Avengers. Cause I think that's where they'll go.
There we go. Yeah, for me, it felt like it for me, and because I don't know that I'll ever get a moment like I got with Thanos being victorious again. But you know, I love the big bad guy. That's why I love the Triple H and Thanos picture. Even though I think Triple H might have modeled his life after Thanos in a lot of ways,
right.
and I think that comparison is definitely valid. So, good stuff there. You can find him on the Twitter at Wrestling Realist. It's WrestlingRealist. Patrick, anything for the good of the people before you go?
Congratulations to Glenn Jacobs on winning your
L-O-U-N.
I didn't know you were going to say something actually important. Jeez.
Yeah, he won his primary.
Good job, Kane.
He's 17 votes.
How many votes was there even available? Like, how small is this?
I don't know, but he won his the Republican primary by 17 votes
for his
general candidacy.
There you
so
go.
Glenn moves on.
That's
sorry,
right.
Man.
You're welcome.
That's from the world of wrestling to Glenn Jacobs and his candidacy there, though. Good job. Good job, Kane. I'm glad I don't live there because I can never look at him as anything other than Kane.
He's big in Tennessee.
Okay,
you know
now pretend to say goodbye, but you know what's going to happen.
Goodbye?
F-A-B-U-L-O-U-S.
You know what to do. Go to thechairshot.com. Find everything you need, professional wrestling and more. That's exactly where you can find it, at thechairshot.com on the Twitter, as well as the Facebook and the Instagram. I'm at ChairShotGreg. We definitely want to see you there. Spend some time with us and hang out because you know what to do.
Thechairshot.com. Always use your head.
Enjoy Backlash this weekend. It's the first co-branded pay-per-view, non-Big Four pay-per-view of this new era since the most recent brand split. So take it for what it is. Enjoy it. I think it's going to be a good show. I think it's kind of like it's been simple because of the build that it's had, and I think it's actually going to benefit the show quite a bit, and it will be a lot of fun. So enjoy it, and we'll talk to you next week.
Man, is it the power in his hands? Is it his quest for glory? Give give it all you got to fight to the top, so we can know your story.
Why should you visit TheChairShot.com? TheChairShot.com is your home for hard-hitting reviews, news, opinion, and analysis with attitude. Why? Because you're smarter than the average fan. TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
And I love you, Greg.